Annoy people on the quiet car and call the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
BT and Sal back on the fan. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. Before we get into the football, Mink, how's it feel to be back?
Yeah, no, it's pretty good. I mean, I haven't done this in 4 years.
Mm. You haven't been in studio doing updates in 4 years?
In studio doing updates in four years.
That happened to me once, too, but I got fired.
Well,
I was going to say, I heard them ask you before, how was retirement? I was going to force retirement a little bit different.
4 years. It doesn't seem like 4 years. My goodness. 4 years.
April 3rd, 2020.
Wow.
My, my last update.
It's always so I heard you this morning, obviously, and I knew you were going to be here. And it's always so comforting, and I know I speak for everybody, to hear Mink doing an update. Same like if Huesler popped back in and did an update. Like, there's just... I don't know, there's a soothing, reassuring nature to hearing one of the old G's doing an update here on the fan. It's awesome to have you back, buddy.
Oh, thank you. And I will say this, you know, coming in and working on the computer was a challenge.
Yeah, no more chiseling out of tablets, huh, Mink?
Everybody kept saying, you know, it'd be like riding a bicycle. Yeah. Well, know what? That bicycle that I was on had a flat tire.
Yeah.
It was tough.
Did they change the system?
It's the same system.
So what, you forgot?
Working the computer was always a challenge for you, no?
Huh? Yeah. Well, that's true.
You got to see what a St. John's notes. Writes in calligraphy.
Oh, boy.
It's the 1800s.
Oh, God. You two are going to be doing tournament games this year or what?
Yeah.
I haven't done that in a while. The last one we were together in Dayton. Ugh. And against Arizona State. Chris Mullen was the coach.
Yeah, Mullen, shout out.
That was the last time that we were in an NCAA tournament.
Until this year. You know it's coming. Rick's got it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we have plenty of time to talk about St. John's, but I wanted at least to have you on and say hi to everybody and let everybody know we love you.
How far down the depth chart did they have to go to get you in here? Was it like no CeeLo?
Oh, my God.
I'm saying. Jeez. I want to know why we don't see more of you.
Well, there was no CeeLo.
No Schwartz.
And no Peter Schwartz.
What about Ack? They couldn't make him do a 20-hour shift.
They give Marco a call?
Ack's on vacation.
Okay.
And Ack's in his vacation in his apartment.
Wow. How far, Mink? Oh, you're going to be back doing some regular fill-ins? I mean, we got Joe B, we got Summers, and why not the big man?
Well.
Yeah. Sweater and a schmooze coming up after
us. They called last week, and I said yes, and first time in 4 years, here it is.
Did you go you went to the baseball game with Francesa and Huesler, and who else? And Summers, right?
Summers, yeah. We sat literally right next to the dugout.
Got treated like the kings that you guys are?
Yeah.
Rolled out the red carpet for the FAN Legends?
Yeah, well, they did.
Nice.
So that was good.
All right, Mink, it's always good to see you.
We love you, dude.
Always great to be back here. Spend a long time here.
It feels whole to me as somebody who grew up coming, working my way through, whether it's at Astoria having you as a mainstay, as the guy in that newsroom, and then even here when we moved over in 2009, I want to say, right? 2009, moved over here October of 2009, if I'm not mistaken.
15 years now.
Yeah, which is crazy. So it's nice to have you in the building.
And thank you very much. It was great being here. And you know what? I've worked, close to 33 years. And it's the days in Astoria that will always supersede everything. You did not work at the fan unless you worked at Astoria.
Well, I didn't work at Astoria, so what are you trying to say here? I mean, Mink.
Mink, come on. BT's the one who wanted to have you in here for a couple of minutes.
I understand.
Sounds like no.
Come on, we got a show to do.
But Astoria.
Yeah, I know. It was legendary. So different there, my God.
Thank you.
No rules.
It was BT because...
Well, no rules, you're right.
I'm sure.
Well, I don't know about
very
that.
Very few rules.
And obviously, Mink, you far predate me, but I was there 2003 as an intern, so I got to experience it for at least a good 6-plus years with Imus there, with Mike and the dog, in the prime of their career. So It was just a different feel. This is like business-like here. It was locker room-like.
You didn't steal Mike's food, did you?
No, I did not. That was the intern you brought in, Jeff Barr. You got him the internship. The guy stole Mike's egg roll. You ever heard of that?
His egg roll?
Yeah. We used to leave food in the community spot.
Yeah.
And Mike was eating Chinese food during the break or whatever, and he left an egg roll there, went in to do the show.
Half-bitten or fully?
No, it was fully. But it was in like the community spot, but he just happened to be eating it there.
Yeah, so
intern gets up, thinks that it's community food. This kid Jeff Barr eats the egg roll. Mike comes back out after a segment. Where's my egg roll?
Was he mad? He wasn't mad.
Somebody said it wasn't the worst thing you could do, but it's not good. Something like that.
Jeez.
All right, Mink, thank you. Now can we do the show? All right.
Bye, Minky.
Yeah. So BT, the football thing, the one thing I'm not going to do here, and we'll get back to the Mets calls, 888-808-1019, we'll get in some Yankees this hour as well, but one thing I will not do is overreact to the preseason. Like, enough. I get that people sometimes feel like they don't want to talk about baseball, so they got to work in football content, and there are some legitimate stories. We did it last week talking about Rodgers, whether he should play or shouldn't, and that still could be a storyline, but or Malik Nabers' injury, and he's going to sit out practice today with the sore ankle or whatever. But come on, the overreacting to the performance in practice, in preseason games, I just can't do it. I'm not going to force an opinion or get through a show and talk about it like it matters, because it really doesn't. Maybe it used to 10, 15 years ago. Maybe it should. But in today's NFL, it does not matter what happens in the preseason, because guys aren't playing. And when they do, they're not really playing to get ready for the regular season anymore.
All right, so before I go, is there anything that you're referring to specifically? Or just a general take on training camp football?
I mean, I don't know if it's something. I heard Boomer talking this morning about Jaden Daniels saying, oh, maybe he's the next C.J. Stroud. Yeah, and look, obviously Boomer is a quarterback, so he knows this stuff. I'm not trying to pick on him, but just the idea, what, because Jaden Daniels ran around for a few snaps in a preseason game, now he's C.J. Stroud? And it's not Boomer, it's everybody else doing the same thing. Malik Nabers, maybe he will be a stud, but if he is, it's not going to be because of what we've seen in training camp. How is that more meaningful than what we saw him do in college? Or how is any of that relevant to what we're going to potentially see in game action when it counts?
You know what I think it is? I think that we are just so starving for football, that maybe sensibility gets blurred a little bit. And I don't mean former players like Boomer talking about current players. I mean, maybe it's a hot take, or it's an opinion, or it's just an expectation of the season. It's a bridge to talk football. What I do myself, right?
Yeah.
I really react to two things with fervor, and then I think everything else I kind of take with a grain of salt. Number one, if you're a rookie head coach, what kind of camp are you running? Like, what can I deduce from whatever I can get my ears on the record, off the record, video clips, whatever I can extract from camp with a rookie coach, especially a general giant coach.
Right.
Now I'm like, okay, that's interesting to me, because that's a template for the future. And not always, but it could be. And then quarterback battles, whether it's Geno and Mark Sanchez in the day, or what does Zach Wilson look like in year two? I'll back a couple of years ago, I'll always get wrapped up in that. How does Rodgers look rolling out? Some sprints to his right coming off the Achilles, but everything else to me. The other thing I do react to, is at least specific to the Jets and the Giants, is offensive line continuity, because those are that's the single unit that has decimated both of these teams for years. I don't mean that they're Super Bowl caliber teams in the past with competent offensive line play, but it was so bad and so substandard and so many different combinations. And the Giants have this so far. There's not a spot right now for Evan Neal's not even playing. And the Jets hopefully get that continuity with Tyron Smith and the other kids, Tippmann year two. So I think that that's important, but I think I'm largely with you, but it's football, so we get jacked up.
Well, you say that it used to matter. To me, it did matter more, and I do think there are certain things, like if it were rookie quarterbacks, when Daniel Jones was a rookie, or Zach Wilson, those are things you want to see, how they look. I don't care if it's just preseason. It's the NFL. It's different than college. How they look at the NFL level. Are they overmatched? They look like they belong. I think there are certain things you can take from watching a rookie quarterback in the NFL's preseason. But I do feel like now, and I feel like back then it meant more. Now it gets overblown. Every damn play of training camp is tweeted about. Like, Enough.
It's a little much.
Oh, my God. Enough. Tweeted about and reported on and talked about every second. Like, it matters. Like, it means something. Oh, Daniel Jones connected to Malik Nabers. Yeah, I mean, I'd hope so. They're in practice. If they're not connecting in practice, then, what, I mean, then you have no chance. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm not trying to just pick on those guys, but it's been, like, that has been talked about quite a bit. And, yeah, with these two teams, Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback for the Jets, Daniel Jones, the quarterback for the Giants, nothing to discuss. So, there isn't anything there to me to get hung up on. I know we're all starved for football. It's coming. It'll be here before you know it. It already is here.
Oh, it's here.
But let's stop with the overreacting to the preseason.
By the way, how weird is it the Jets played at noon on Saturday? I'm like, well, I got a tea time. I ain't watching. Yeah. I mean, I followed up. I did what I had to do as a football fan, as a Jets fan, as a, you know, as a talk show host in New York City. I mean, who's staying in? I mean, you could record it clearly. Who's sitting on their couch on a Saturday when it's been, after it rained for three straight days and the sun's finally making an appearance? I'm going to chain myself to the couch and watch a game preseason football Saturday at noon?
A game that doesn't mean anything?
No chance in hell.
I will watch one game.
Yep, the third one.
Yeah. The Jets and Giants.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
I was going to say in its entirety, but even that.
Yeah, even that's a stretch. I'm not watching four quarters of that.
You used to be able to. Now it's like, come on.
But let me ask you this, Sal. You talk about, like, the, whether it's overhype or overselling some of the things that don't mean that much with the NFL. Is the NFL, I know it's the NFL, so it's a different monster, it's a different machine, but is that really that different from everything else in life? Think about that. The Yankees go to training camp, Mets go to training camp. We're not getting inundated with, you know, 20-second video clips by talking Yanks who do a really good job. You know, John Boy, the Yankee beat report. Like, this is just the world we're in. It's a micro assessment of everything.
Well, it is one thing I was thinking, and it even led to my point about the Mets, where we started the show talking about not overreacting to a 10-game trip. I know that what we do as sports fans is live and die with every pitch, with every snap, with every game, as we should. However, there is a significant overreaction that takes place in today's world, in large part because of social media. Because I think if social media were not a thing, the Mets 4-6 West Coast trip would feel like a 4-6 West Coast trip. And you'd be like, wow, that was a crappy series against the Mariners.
Yep.
However, they're right there in the thick of things. But yet you go on social media and you see the overwhelming negativity and it's like, oh, they're dead. You know, the Mets go on a 5-game winning streak and they're going to be the best team in baseball. The Mets go on a 4-6 West Coast trip and they look lifeless in Seattle. And, oh my God, they're buried. And this is what we thought. There is so much of an overreaction. Again, I get that we have to react to what happens, especially us being on the radio five days a week. But we don't have to overreact to extremes, like it seems to be the norm.
Yeah, I don't think now some people disagree with this assertion. I don't think that you can overreact with an NFL game. I think that, to me, even though one game is only literally 1/17th of a season, the football losses feel heavier than even, say, the Yankees or the Mets losing, getting swept over the weekend. Like, the Jets come in and they lose 30-10, and the Giants come in and they lose 17-3, that will feel heavier and more bleak. It will create more of a bleak outlook for us, even if we're wrong saying this, projecting this, and many others as well, than the Yankees getting swept by the Red Sox or the Mets getting swept by the Braves. It's just, so I'm okay with that. Reacting with more fervor to football because it's just that energy. But I just think that when you have such statistics, like, you can't be lazy, or you can be lazy now and bring something to the table. And I'll give you an example. So what is Nimmo? Is he 5 for his last?
No, he's not. He's 3 for his last 25.
Okay, so Brandon Nimmo's 3 for his last 25. He's hitting like 1-something over how many games, whatever. Mm-hmm.
153, now, I think it is, something like that.
153 over. Okay, so 153 over the last 20 games, whatever it might be. Something like that in that neighborhood. So to pile on Brandon Nimmo, now all you have to do is have a social media account because you're going to see that somewhere, okay? To pile on Brandon Nimmo, to call up Mike and Chris, not that they wouldn't get calls like this back in the day, but you had to be much more statistically invested, read the articles, watch every game if it's referenced. You couldn't just parachute in. And I think that's the difference, and that's the thing that bothers me today, where it's people parachuting in, not just sports, about politics, about really sensitive things. One thing to have a real measured take based on the accumulation of facts or information or what you interpret to be real, because there's different. No, I get that, but it's like it's taking one little line and seeing it and bringing it to the table with the energy like it's the end of the world. That's that's what bothers me.
Even I saw you do this with the Alonso stuff last week when I was out.
I defended him.
Yeah, I know. You defended him.
Would you not have defended him?
I would not have in that particular
case. Why?
Now, I understand why you did, but because to me, it is not just that statement or just that quote, which whether it was taken out of context, whether it was more to it or not, to me is irrelevant. That's how he has behaved pre-All-Star selection. And then again in that statement where you just don't take accountability, all he had to say simply was, look, I wish I was having a better season. I'm not. I'm still in a spot to where if I get this thing turned around, I could produce the numbers that I'm expecting myself to produce, but I'm not. And instead, he tried to deflect and just say, whoa, I was an All-Star this year. And even that comment's not that bad. I'm still on pace for 40 home runs. Like, go do it. Go do it. And no, you're not. I'm watching you. And by the way, the good pitching made you look embarrassing. So, but go back to that comment from Pete. You're right. Like, I didn't see the whole thing, but I saw that quote, and it bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but bothered me not just for that quote in isolation.
Because of other stuff that added up. Yeah.
Because it's a pattern of Pete's personality that rubs me the wrong way.
Understood. And I just wanted
to be... Lack of accountability, for the record. I'm not talking about personally.
No, I got, of course. I got you. And I just, you know, I think maybe I was, quite frankly, you know, in all honesty, maybe I was a little more aware of diving into that and treating him fairly, not because I care what people think, what I say about Pete, but I'm well on the record about why I don't think Pete should be here forever. I didn't want it just to seem like, all right, I'm just going to, anytime I can take a shot. Now, I'm not going to create and defend him if I don't believe that there's a defense that's like right. warranted or with merit. I just wanted to make sure I really dove into the entire depth and breadth of the context of the quote. Because I didn't want to be unfair to Pete. Because I've been very honest about Pete for a long time.
Right. I mean, if Clay Holmes was like, well, yeah, I've blown 10 saves and I put guys on base and scare the bejesus out of Yankee fans every time I take them out, but I've been an All-Star and I'm still on pace to have, you know, 35 saves, whatever it may be. How would you feel after that? The reality is, BT, the reality. This is not our reality. It's the reality. Pete Alonso, by every measurement possible, is having a down season.
No question.
And he won't acknowledge that. That's the issue. Like, that's the issue with that quote. We're not making it up. I'm not saying, oh, yeah, Pete, you should be hitting 350 home runs. By his own track record, he's having a bad season. He should not have been an All-Star, but was selected over more deserving teammates, specifically Lindor, because of the stupid home run derby, which he, by the way, failed in. Anybody want to bring that up? And I want to see how he defends that. Well, what's his excuse for that? So by every measurement possible, Alonso was having a down year. And then he goes out there with that quote and doesn't acknowledge that. It's very simple. If you suck, just say you suck. Or, you know what, I'm not having a good year. Maybe not suck, whatever. I had a crappy show today. You know what, that's on me. That was a bad opinion. That was whatever it may be. Take accountability for it. It's not that difficult. And he won't do it. That's why I think most fans, rightfully so, were ticked off with that comment.
Okay, do you think it's because he is egotistical and almost unable to levy self-criticism, or because he's just socially awkward and just not good with a mic?
I think he's...
Because there's two very different motives there.
I think he's trying to ignore a negative reality.
Okay, so even if that's true, and you might be right, like he's circumventing the reality
just
that we all know.
But not doing it to like fool us for himself.
Okay, so I was going to go there. Is that a bad thing for an athlete to not, like, it could be a really great, if you acknowledge that something is really wrong, maybe that frees up a part of your brain and maybe it actually propels you to be greater.
That's what I would think.
Me too, probably.
Sweep the dirt up instead of under the rug.
Or if you do acknowledge it, maybe that reality becomes even more stark and it gets worse. Like, maybe that's his way of just fending off. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's his
self-preservation
way.
Self-preservation almost.
Yeah, but I think it would do him good to accept, acknowledge, exhale, and go out, like, the damage.
You might be right, by the way.
Yeah.
You might be right.
That would be my assessment.
Yeah, I just, because a couple of times he said, hey, listen, I just want to finish strong and help the team. Like, I wanted to make sure people understood. I didn't think that it was callous or ego-driven to the point where it was so selfish. I thought it was a little obtuse because I think he is a little bit like that in most of his dealings with the media about important stuff. I didn't think it was bad.
dead.
But I can see why that bothered a lot of people. I get it.
Talk New York sports on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
BT, it's out back on The Fan. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. Get back to the calls in just a second. Do you have any concerns, BT, about the Yankees, whether it be the depth in the lineup or lack of depth behind Soto and Judge or the bullpen, which even in the win yesterday, still some negative signs there as far as the bullpen goes. Where are you at with the Yankees right now?
I like this team a lot. I think they could get to the World Series, and I think that they can win it. I think that they are flawed. I think every team that's good is flawed. I don't think that there's a perfect team out there. I mean, very rarely is there ever a perfect team anyway, but this year is very, very open. I think that, like in years past, I could just go by my gut, all right, as I answer a question like that. The reaction, the feeling that I had during the season, and even during the 2022 season when the Yankees beat the Guardians and then obviously got swept by the Astros in the ALCS, coming up short of the World Series, like never once during that season, even despite the crazy start that they had, did I think that they were a World Series team. I didn't. I didn't see it. I didn't feel it. I don't think the lineup daily reflected it. I think that what's happened now, you know, with the addition, I know Chisholm booted a ball third, I get that, yesterday, but the addition of Chisholm has now enabled Aaron Boone to not have to play DJ LeMahieu every day or somebody else that is cold or you might not want to play. Now, I want Dominguez up here. I don't know what they're waiting on.
No, they said there's no lanes for him.
Yeah,
Cashman,
no lanes.
I think, likes bowling as well. As Aaron Boone.
I know. That bothered me. And to me, the quicker you get him up here, the quicker he's assimilated into the fabric of the team. And he has not played a lot of baseball. Like, it's not like he's like, he played 60, 70 games last year. He played eight games last year. You know, obviously the Tommy John surgery. The abdomen, the oblique. Yeah. I mean, it really deprived him a lot of baseball. He has played well, very well in the minors. Power's there. He's playing well. Get him up so that he's not, you know, that you're not trying to wedge him in September and then October. Like, if Dominguez is somewhere in this lineup, along with Soto and Judge and Wells, who I told you would hit,
right?
This team could win the World Series. I honestly believe that. Certainly get there.
So it's because of the emergence of Wells and the addition of Jazz? Because it wasn't
that long
ago.
Those are two big things, though.
No, understood. I'm just saying, because there is a turnaround in belief. Like, I still look at them, certainly they're playing better than when they were playing, like, one of the worst teams in baseball outside of one of the worst teams in baseball history in the White Sox. I mean, a 7-week stretch where the Yankees...
They were awful.
Right. So the only difference is Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, obviously the emergence of Austin Wells. Some of the guys starting to play a little bit better.
Volpe's gone cold again, but he had about a 25-game run where he was kind of looking like the first month Volpe. Right. So that changed things a bit.
But he's back to going cold again. Yeah, so he's another one who's inconsistent.
Yeah.
You know, Giancarlo having his presence felt. Do you believe that that's going to be the case?
No, I don't put a ton on that.
Right. So it's either going to be Giancarlo or Dominguez, one or the other. If Giancarlo gets cold or Giancarlo gets hurt, that's when the lane is going to open up for Dominguez. But look at the—I mean, Leiter yesterday got lit up.
Yeah, that was a little bothersome and worrisome.
I mean, Clay, the Yankees should have cruised to a victory yesterday, and they didn't. I mean, they had to hold on for dear life in a game where they were rolling right along. It's nitpicking. Don't get me wrong, it is nitpicking because clearly the Yankees can be as good as any team, not only in the American League, but in Major League Baseball. They get two of the best players in the sport with Soto and Judge. And when those guys are being pitched to, they do damage. End of story. The question is, will they continue to be pitched to? And how, you know, the Yankee lineup as a whole will perform against the best of the best in the postseason.
Yeah, and how that lineup is constructed. You know, there's some decisions that they have to make that we just, you know, alluded to. Obviously, the Stanton stuff, the Dominguez stuff. Who do you hit in a four-hole? Do you swap Judge and Soto? I mean, there's a lot going on.
Holmes, do you trust him to close? I mean, we're talking about the lineup aspect of it, but you throw Leiter in there. It was supposed to be Leiter and then Holmes. I mean, who are the arms you trust to the back end of the bullpen?
I do trust Leiter still. Leiter throws well, strikeout rate, whatever, bore you with stuff. That's something that they needed. Clay Holmes is what he is. He's good, but he obviously pitches to contact. Not ideal, especially with a ghost runner at second, although that won't be the case in the playoffs, but still meaningful games down the road. I think that, and I got to get this off my chest here. It's got to air a grievance. Nestor Cortez has got to go. Like, that's it. It's over. The cute little story, the cute little engine that could. Oh, look at Nasty Nestor with his 13,000, you know, machinations from the stretch, or from, I should say, from the windup, you know, flipping his leg around and twirling around like Louis Tiant. It's not good. His stuff's not good. Like, his stuff is not good. And I almost laughed. Like, I even tweeted this over the weekend. I'm like, I should probably correct my own tweet, but I really don't care enough to do it. Unless I was just, like, wrong on something, like, wrong, and I had to apologize, I would do that. But I wasn't going to jump out. Oh, let me modify this tweet, amend this. No, because I tweeted, you know, cute story with Cortez, it's over, go to the pen. I don't even want him in the bullpen. Like, what I should have said was, like, with an asterisk and subtweeted myself, and what I mean by going to the pen, I mean he can pitch in a blowout. Because there's this thought that some Yankee fans think if they're getting their asses kicked or they're destroying somebody, then he could pitch. There's this thought that Cortez is going to come out and get some stud lefties in October. No. That's not what should happen, and that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is that he's going to take a seat, and he will lose his starting spot unless somebody else gets hurt as soon as Clark Schmidt comes back in, and then he's an afterthought. And then Nestor Cortez, in my opinion, again, I do respect the climb. He's got average stuff. So it's there's an element of overachievement. I'm not trying to dilute that because I do respect that when people do more than they're probably supposed to do based on physical limitations. And he's got a lot compared to his peers. But it's time to win a World Series or at least get there for the first time in a long time. Cortez can't pitch anymore.
You might need him.
Need him for what?
You might need him. Oh, you don't know about Luis Gil and how he's going to hold up.
But until they do that, then Luis Gil is a staple. He's a starter.
Carlos Rodon.
You can laugh at Rodon. Rodon's going to have 17 wins this year. He's been pretty good.
Okay,
his last five starts, his ERA is 2.5.
Yeah. Oh, good.
He's been pitching well for a while.
Good, okay. All it takes is one bad one in the postseason. You trust Rodon?
I didn't say that I trust him, but I'm not looking to banish him now after a month and a half of great pitching.
Stroman, is he all now rested and ready to go?
He's a starter.
Well, not in the postseason, he's not.
He's not going to start in the postseason. He's not going to start at all.
So who's starting in the postseason? Postseason.
It's going to be Gerrit Cole, Luis Gil, and probably Clark Schmidt. It's pretty good.
You're going to need another one. And even that, I mean, you're relying a lot on both Gil and Clark Schmidt.
I didn't say it was perfect, but you asked me a question. Yeah. I gave you three pretty good answers. Gerrit Cole, Clark Schmidt.
Cole, yes, assuming that he continues to turn it around.
Of course.
You have to count on that. Otherwise, I mean, why even have the conversation?
Yeah.
And Gil, if Gil is at his best like he's been, I mean, the walks would worry me. Postseason, maybe pressure worry me a little bit with him. And obviously, more than anything else, fatigue, the amount of innings. But assuming Gil is atop his game, Cole and Gil are as good as any 1-2 punch in Major League Baseball.
Yes.
But it's after that.
I got to tell you, I may have even shortchanged Rodon. And not to just branch into a 20-minute Rodon debate. Yeah. But, you know, I trust me, his bad moments have been bad. I think part of the thing with Rodon, and it's hard to do this, it's hard to divorce ourselves from the nonsense he gave us last year.
But he's also been bad at times this year.
But every pitcher has moments and bouts of ineffectiveness. Like, the numbers
What's
are
ERA
still
overall?
The numbers. No, I think it's like 4. Like, very, very low 4.
I mean, it's not good for a number 2 starter.
But it's not terrible.
Yeah. Wow.
And he's really only had 3 or 4 bad starts. If you look at, like, of his 20 starts,
against
he's been
good teams.
He's been good. I know the Orioles won, you know, early in the season. I think Carlos Rodon, for me, is at least still in the discussion to get that baseball as the third starter.
Right.
In a playoff
game. And then push Schmidt.
I think
he will. That's
might.
Part of the problem.
He might.
I think it's going to be Cole, Rodon, Gil, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, you have to see the matchups, who you play, lefty-righty stuff, whatever splits.
Maybe Stroman gets the fourth start.
Stroman's bullpen. I would like Stroman coming out of the pen.
Yeah, guess who's not going to like that?
Well, that's fine. What's he going to do, not play?
I don't know. It could be an issue.
Not going to pitch like he didn't pitch on opening day?
I don't think Stroman's going to, you know, he's very routine. I don't know if he'll be suited to come out of the box. I'm just painting picture here.
Listen, you might not be wrong with that. I know he's a creature of habit. Most athletes are, by the way. But if Mike Mussina was able to deviate from his structured existence and come out of the bullpen and get a double play against the Red Sox, I'm not saying Stroman has Mussina stuff. But, like, Mike Mussina couldn't do anything unless it was his schedule. And he even deviated from it for the betterment of the team. I think Stroman's not as good as I was hoping recently. He has not been the problem a lot of people thought he would be. He's doing his job. He's going home, but he's keeping his mouth shut. He's fit in.
No, he's been fine. Let me ask you what you would think your biggest area of need is for this Yankee team to win the World Series. Just like you asked me before with the Mets. to where, what do I think needs to happen for them to be a postseason team? What do you think needs to happen for the Yankees to be a World Series caliber team?
Like, I think Gerrit Cole's got to resemble the best pitcher in baseball. That's my
that's
answer.
That's your biggest concern.
I'll tell you why. Well, you said like things. But yes, it's not a not that I'm afraid that he won't be, but I think it's paramount that he is, because if he is, then like residually downstream, the bullpen can then be used more effectively for Luis Gil, who might not go deep, or Rodon, or like it sets them. It just sets them up.
Yep.
To gain quick altitude.
I would probably say for me, it's protection for Soto Judge.
Mm-hmm. Well, not for Soto. The protection is Judge
for
Soto.
For the combination of two. I mean, you could. There are ways you could pitch around both. The protection for those two in the lineup.
Yep.
It can't just be those two in the lineup. Is it going to be Giancarlo? I have my doubts.
Yeah.
Is it going to be Austin Wells? I don't know. Is it going to be Dominguez? But that, to me, is the biggest key, because the Yankees' offense can be as great of an offense as we've seen, but they also could be pitched around if they aren't getting the proper protection behind those two all-time great players in that line.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Swung on. There it goes. Deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
BT, it's out back on the Fan. Fanatics Fest NYC is taking over the Javits Center from August 16th through the 18th. Right now, be caller number 13 at 866-540-WFAN. That's 866-540-9326 for your chance to win a four-pack of tickets and be part of the first-ever immersive sports fan festival at Fanatics Fest. From our friends at Fanatics Live, visit fanaticsfest.com for the full athletic lineup. We will be out there Friday, BT. Can't wait. I'm actually going to be out there Saturday as well with SNY and doing a show with Beningo on Saturday morning. So it's going to be a busy weekend at the Fanatics Fest. Looking forward to it.
You ever do one with Joe before?
I have not. Have you done it?
Yeah, not many. Couple.
Yeah, so they were saying, I was telling Hurley, I was like, oh, I'm going to be out there anyway for SNY. You know, if you need somebody to do a show, maybe I could do it Saturday. He's like, well, Beningo's going to do the show. I was like, oh, well, I mean, I've never done that. I think that'd be a cool opportunity to host a show with Joe.
Yeah, it's cool, but did you make sure you're getting some extra loot on that, or are you just doing this one on the arm here?
No, come on. We can't do anything on the arm, right?
Well, I mean, you get a little something carved out for you,
yeah,
I hope.
Yeah, I hope so as well. I mean,
but did you confirm?
Yes, we got that taken right. care of. I was trying, though, to find the, because my first call ever was to Joe on the overnight. The first words out of my mouth were, believe, Joe, I despise the Yankees. This was 95, the night after, God, I always forget the game. It was probably game three or four. It had to be game three or four in Seattle.
Okay.
And I want to say it was when Edgar Martinez, not the game winner,
not the game five with Ken Griffey coming around.
It was either game three or four, whatever that night was.
All right.
I called Joe and was telling him I despise the Yankees and whatever, was talking about that. But I had it on tape somewhere. And I think I erased over it because all I had was calls of me calling Mike and Chris. But I wish I could go back and find it. I wonder if there's a way we could do it in the archives. Anyway, because it was pretty cool. 1995, my first ever call to the station was to Joe B. And now I'll be doing a show with him on Saturday.
That is cool. Symmetry. I'm surprised that you hated the Yankees that much back then, because the Yankees hadn't done much up until that. I would have thought, listen, I know you're a Mets fan. So like, but like, why despise the Yankees in 95? They hadn't won a championship since 1978 at that point.
It's a great point. I think that was the beginning of what would eventually become like big time hatred.
So you kind of felt in the bones that the Yankees were getting ready to Yankees again.
I think probably because at that point in my life, like, I just never expected the Yankees to be good. As crazy as that sounds, I know for young listeners, there was legitimate, like, I remember thinking to myself, the Yankees will never win a World Series. Like, they stink. Even probably, you know, in 95, like, was thinking that, just because I'd never seen it before, which is obviously foolish thinking and idiotic, especially the way that things turned out. But that's how it was then. Me growing up a young Met fan who dominated the town in the 80s. Now, obviously, by 95, they weren't any good. But I just remember, I don't know what, it must have been going to school and hearing about the Yankees and their rise as everybody started to get back into it, because they were, for the first time, good in
years. It's like
years.
The Force Awakens almost.
It's a great point, though. I never thought about that.
Yeah, just curious.
Why do they hate them at that particular point when they didn't even win yet? Let's get back to the phones here. Steve is calling from Nanuet. What's up, Steve?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys, like you always do. Long-time Yankee fan here. I don't know much about the Mets other than what I hear from you guys on the radio, although I do root for them, being they're a New York team. And I think that you would probably agree that when the Yanks signed Rizzo, they figured he had a couple more years left in him, which I'm a big Rizzo fan. But I think you would agree that it was probably a little bit of enticement to sign Judge. I don't know much, again, about the Mets. Who's playing second base for the Mets right now? Is it McNeil?
Yeah, McNeil, Iglesias, usually a combo of those two.
Yeah, and I know Sal's not a big McNeil fan. So I'm just wondering.
Well, he's been good. McNeil's been good, but no, I'm not a big Jeff McNeil fan.
Yeah, I've gathered that. What do you think with the Rizzo-Judge situation, I know from what I hear about Cohen with the money and he's going to want to go after Torres. What do you think he's going to want to go after Soto.
Okay.
Is there any possibility that they might try and lure Soto with signing Torres to play second base? And on the flip side, the second part of the question is, I believe, like everybody else, that Torres is gone after this year. But is there a possibility the Yanks might give him some leeway in an effort to sign Soto?
You talking about Glaber specifically?
They are the best, but,
It's a good question, Glaber. Steve. Thanks for the call. I don't think it should have any impact whatsoever on trying to sign Juan Soto, but we've seen this before. I mean, we've seen it with Nathaniel Hackett and Aaron Rodgers. Sometimes you bring in the friend of the star player to help lure. I mean, maybe the batting coach, same thing. We heard that. Rosler, a great friend or whatever you want to say of Soto, loves working with him. I don't think you think the Mets or Yanks would try to sign Soto, sign Glaber just to entice Soto.
Well, I definitely don't think the Yankees would. I mean, the Mets, I didn't really think about that. I mean,
well, forget it, but just in general, like, do you think that it would have any impact? Whether they will or won't, I don't think that they will. Mets certainly are not going to do it because they have young guys that can play second base.
I don't think it'll. And listen, because then it kind of goes against everything that we've said with Juan Soto. Yeah. It's all about the money.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, Torres, I would think, would be immaterial in the equation. I mean, how would you, let's suspend the probable reality of what's going to happen. Torres will not be signed by the Mets, right? But in a way to entice Soto to go to the Mets, and let's say that this actually mattered, and the Mets give Torres 5 years, but you get Soto.
All right. Yeah, I mean, well, you could say the same thing for the Yankees. Yankees don't have a clear second baseman right now. Could they just... I know we've all had it with Glaber being the Yankee second baseman, or at least the majority of us have had it.
For sure.
But if Soto said, hey, I want X amount, I'll give you a little discount or whatever it may be, but I want Glaber Torres back, you're not going to do that?
I don't know that I would.
I also don't think it's good. I don't think it's good business for a team to do that.
I don't know if I would want that.
Because then where do you draw the line? What about Judge being like, oh, yeah, I want my buddies in here, too.
I think he got Rizzo to the Calder's point.
Yeah, well, okay, but is he going to be back?
No, there's a $6 million buyout next year for Rizzo. If the Yankees don't buy him out, which they will, he's due $17 million. So he'll be gone.
Right.
And they'll save $11 million.
So, I mean, where do you draw the line? I do think it... In certain cases, maybe.
I mean, listen, we might get to a point where Juan Soto might say, unless Craig Carton becomes the official voice of the Yankees, I'm not coming back to the Yankees. I mean, maybe, forget about Gleyber Torres. Yeah. Maybe he demands Carton stays in the booth.
Yeah. Or stays out of it.
That's true.
Be the other case.
Did you hear him over the weekend?
I did hear a little bit of it.
And?
I thought he was entertaining.
Doesn't sound like a real strong endorsement there. The inflection is a little weak.
Do I think he's a play-by-play guy?
No.
Okay. I put it this way. I think Craig chose the right profession.
Yeah. When I turned him on, I was going to play golf, and I heard him, and I was thinking, I'm like, man, you know, he doesn't sound like a conventional play-by-player. And he loosened up, and, you know, I thought he had good chemistry with Susan as much as you can, you know, given their history and her suspending, you know, whatever she knew about that. I thought it was cool. I thought it was a fun experience. And, you know, you hear Carton, you always kind of laugh to yourself a little bit. But he didn't embarrass himself. I don't think he embarrassed himself.
You thought it was good?
I thought it was okay. I thought if I'm grading him as a play-by-player, you know, it's okay.
He's not a player.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Player,
so right. I'm grading him on Craig.
Right.
So, like, if you know Craig and you like Craig, which I do, then you enjoyed it. Yeah. I also didn't listen to it for 3 straight hours coming back from a road trip.
Here's all you need to know about it.
What?
I wouldn't have gone out of my way to listen to it if he weren't doing the game.
See, I would have put it on anyway. That's just what I do. Yeah. As a Yankee fan, I do that.
Specifically, like, yeah, maybe I would have put the Yankees on, check the score for a little bit. Especially if I'm on vacation, I don't want to be bothered with, don't care. I'm sorry, Yankees, Rangers, no thank you. I'm enjoying my day by the pool, doing what I got to do. I'll listen to some music. But because it was him, I was like, oh, let me listen. And I stuck with it a lot longer, trying to, you know, get a feel for it.
Who do you think would be the, if everybody at the station had a chance to do that for a weekend and then got maybe more runway, who do you think could be the best baseball play-by-player here? How do you think you would do? I think you'd do pretty well, too. I do.
Here's
I think
one,
you'd be okay.
Here's one thing that I was thinking about with Craig. Does voice matter anymore in play-by-play? Like, it doesn't matter in radio, but for play-by-play...
I think it still matters a little bit with play-by-play.
Right.
A little more than
too.
Just doing a show.
And it's not just Craig. Like, I noticed this with Steve Gelbs of SNY, who I think did a nice job, but... And obviously, there's a... You know, it's Gary Cohen, so anybody that fills in for Gary Cohen, you're going to feel just less of a presence.
Yeah.
But I felt like that with Craig a little bit, too, where it's Craig Carton, so when you're on the... When Craig's on the radio, you feel that presence, but I didn't feel that for the game.
Yeah,
but
yet, I do know what you mean by that.
I felt the presence of Susan.
Because you're used to hearing her in that situation.
Right, so is it just because it's not Gary Cohen or because it's not John Sterling? But I still feel like with, you know, Brennan Burke has a presence.
He's good.
He's a great play-by-play guy.
Yep.
And it's not just him, and I'm not leaving. I don't want to even mention on the names because it's like I'm leaving people out. I think they all do a good job. But I just, I don't know. Or maybe it's just hearing a familiar voice in a different setting that was different to me.
It's a different skill.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Totally different skill. You mean, get a Sean or what? Who, me?
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not going to keep begging for this.
All right,
if they want, you know, a big time voice to show up and sound big time, then I get the invite. And if they don't, then they don't.
Oh boy.
I mean, you asked me to call. I'm just going to be honest with you.
I mean, do I think I can do it?
Yeah, I do.
It's funny you say that because I was legit thinking of you as I'm listening to him and going through the thought of, like, you know, that presence. And I'm like, BT, I think, has. You have that voice and potentially present. Now, I haven't heard you do play-by-play. I know you did it, but I think that you would have, I think that you would have that. I don't know if it's just familiarity with, you know, with doing the shows with you.
But I know what you're saying. I mean, listen, I would let others say how I did. I think I would have a blast. I'd love to do it. Yeah. I'm not banking on it because they still haven't called.
It's not going to happen.
But if it ever did, I'd be the best.
In that line.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Swung on. There it goes. Deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
BT, it's out back on the Fan. Fanatics Fest NYC is taking over the Javits Center from August 16th through the 18th. Right now, be caller number 13 at 866-540-WFAN. That's 866-540-9326 for your chance to win a four-pack of tickets and be part of the first-ever immersive sports fan festival at Fanatics Fest. From our friends at Fanatics Live, visit fanaticsfest.com for the full athletic lineup. We will be out there Friday, BT. Can't wait. I'm actually going to be out there Saturday as well with SNY and doing a show with Beningo on Saturday morning. So it's going to be a busy weekend at the Fanatics Fest. Looking forward to it.
You ever do one with Joe before?
I have not. Have you done it?
Yeah, not many. Couple.
Yeah, so they were saying, I was telling Hurley, I was like, oh, I'm going to be out there anyway for SNY. You know, if you need somebody to do a show, maybe I could do it Saturday. He's like, well, Beningo's going to do the show. I was like, oh, well. I mean, I've never done that. I think that'd be a cool opportunity to host a show with Joe.
Yeah, it's cool. But did you make sure you're getting some extra loot on that, or are you just doing this one on the arm here?
No, come on. We can't do anything on the arm, right?
I mean, you get a little something carved out for you.
Yeah,
I hope.
I hope so as well. I mean,
but did you confirm?
Yes, we got that taken care of. I was trying though to find the because my first call ever was to Joe on the overnight.
It was complaining about what?
The first words out of my mouth were, believe, Joe, I despise the Yankees. This was 95, the night after, God, I always forget the game. It was probably game three or four. It had to be game three or four in Seattle.
Okay.
And I want to say it was when Edgar Martinez, not the game winner,
not the game five with Ken Griffey coming around.
It was either game three or four, whatever that night was.
All right.
I called Joe and was telling him I despise the Yankees and whatever was talking about that. But I had it on tape somewhere. And I think I erased over it because all I had was calls of me calling Mike and Chris. But I wish I could go back and find it. I wonder if there's a way we could do it in the archives. Anyway, Because it was pretty cool. 1995, my first ever call to the station was to Joe B, and now I'll be doing a show with him on Saturday.
That is cool symmetry. I'm surprised that you hated the Yankees that much back then, because the Yankees hadn't done much up until that. I would have thought, listen, I know you're a Mets fan, so like, but like, why despise the Yankees in 95? They hadn't won a championship since 1978 at that point.
It's a great point. I think that was the beginning of what would eventually become like big time hatred.
So you kind of felt in the bones that the Yankees were getting ready to Yankees again.
I think probably because at that point in my life, like, I just never expected the Yankees to be good. As crazy as that sounds, I know for young listeners, there was legitimate, like, I remember thinking to myself, the Yankees will never win a World Series. Like, they stink. Even probably, you know, in 95, like, was thinking that. Just because I'd never seen it before. Mm-hmm. Which is obviously foolish thinking and idiotic, especially the way that things turned out. But that's how it was then. Me, growing up a young Met fan who dominated the town in the 80s. Now, obviously, by 95, they weren't any good. But I just remember, I don't know what, it must have been going to school and hearing about the Yankees and their rise as everybody started to get back into it, because they were, for the first time, good in
years. It's like
years.
The Force Awakens almost.
It's a great point, though. I never thought about that.
Yeah, just curious.
Why do they hate them at that particular point when they didn't even win yet? Mm. Let's get back to the phones here. Steve is calling from Nanuet. What's up, Steve?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys, like you always do. Long-time Yankee fan here. I don't know much about the Mets other than what I hear from you guys on the radio, although I do root for them, being they're a New York team. And I think that you would probably agree that when the Yanks signed Rizzo, they figured he had a couple more years left in him, which I'm a big Rizzo fan. But I think you would agree that it was probably a little bit of enticement to sign Judge. I don't know much, again, about the Mets. Who's playing second base for the Mets right now? Is it McNeil?
Yeah, McNeil, Iglesias, usually a combo of those two.
Yeah, and I know Sal's not a big McNeil fan. So I'm just wondering.
Well, he's been good. McNeil's been good, but no, I'm not a big Jeff McNeil fan.
Yeah, I've gathered that. What do you think with the Rizzo-Judge situation, I know from what I hear about Cohen with the money and he's going to want to go after Torres. What do you think he's going to want to go after Soto.
Okay.
Is there any possibility that they might try and lure Soto with signing Torres to play second base? And on the flip side, the second part of the question is, I believe, like everybody else, that Torres is gone after this year. But is there a possibility the Yanks might give him some leeway in an effort to sign Soto?
You talking about Glaber specifically?
That they are best buddies.
Yeah, it's a good question, Glaber. Steve. Yeah, thanks for the call. I don't think it should have any impact whatsoever on trying to sign Juan Soto. But we've seen this before. I mean, we've seen it with Nathaniel Hackett and Aaron Rodgers. Sometimes you bring in the friend of the star player to help lure. I mean, maybe the batting coach. Same thing. We heard that. Rossler, a great friend or whatever you want to say of Soto, loves working with him. I don't think you think the Mets or Yanks would try to sign Soto, sign Glaber just to entice Soto.
Well, I definitely don't think the Yankees would. I mean, the Mets, I didn't really think about that. I mean,
well, forget it, but just in general, like, do you think that it would have any impact? Whether they will or won't, and I don't think that they will. Mets certainly are not going to do it because they have young guys that can play second base.
Yeah, I know. I don't think it'll. And listen, because then it kind of goes against everything that we've said with Juan Soto. Yeah. It's all about the money.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, Torres, I would think, would be immaterial in the equation. I mean, how would you. Let's suspend the probable reality of what's going to happen. Torres will not be signed by the Mets, right? In a way to entice Soto to go to the Mets, and let's say that this actually mattered, and the Mets give Torres 5 years, but you get Soto.
All right. Yeah, I mean, well, you could say the same thing for the Yankees. Yankees don't have a clear second baseman right now. Could they just, I know we've all had it with Glaber being the Yankee second baseman, or at least the majority of us have had it.
No, for sure.
But if it meant, if Soto said, hey, I want X amount, I'll give you a little discount or whatever it may be, but I want Glaber Torres back, you're not going to do that?
I don't know that I would.
I also don't think it's good. I don't think it's good business for a team to do that.
I don't know if I would want that.
Because then where do you draw the line? What about Judge being like, oh, yeah, I want my buddies in here, too.
I think he got Rizzo to the Calder's point.
Yeah. Well, okay, but is he going to be back?
No, there's a $6 million buyout next year for Rizzo. If the Yankees don't buy him out, which they will, he's due $17 million. So he'll be gone.
Right.
And they'll save $11 million.
So, I mean, where do you draw the line? I do think that in certain cases, maybe.
I mean, listen, we might get to a point where Juan Soto might say, unless Craig Carton becomes the official voice of the Yankees, I'm not coming back to the Yankees. I mean, maybe, forget about Glaber Torres. Yeah. Maybe he demands Carton stays in the booth.
Yeah. or stays out of it.
That's true. Did you hear him over the weekend?
I did hear a little bit of it.
And?
I thought he was entertaining.
Doesn't sound like a real strong endorsement there. The inflection is a little weak.
Do I think he's a play-by-play guy?
No.
Okay. I put it this way. I think Craig chose the right profession.
Yeah. When I turned him on, I was going to play golf, and I heard him, and I was thinking, I'm like, man, you know, he doesn't sound like a conventional play-by-player. And he loosened up, and, you know, I thought he had good chemistry with Susan as much as you can, you know, given their whatever, their history and her suspending, you know, whatever she knew about that. I thought it was cool. I thought it was a fun experience. And, you know, you hear Cart and you always kind of laugh to yourself a little bit. But he didn't embarrass himself. I don't think he embarrassed himself.
You thought it was good?
I thought it was okay. I thought if I'm grading him as a play-by-player, you know, it's okay.
He's not a player.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Player,
right. So I'm grading him on Craig.
Right.
So, like, if you know Craig and you like Craig, which I do, then you enjoyed it. Yeah. I also didn't listen to him for three straight hours coming back from a road trip.
Here's all you need to...
It's fine.
Here's all you need to know about it.
What?
I wouldn't have gone out of my way to listen to it if he weren't doing the game.
See, I would have put it on anyway. That's just what I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
As a Yankee fan, I do that.
Maybe I would have put the Yankees on to check the score for a little bit. Especially if I'm on vacation. I don't want to be bothered with. Don't care. I'm sorry. Yankees, Rangers, no thank you. I'm enjoying my day by the pool, doing what I got to do. I'll listen to some music. But because it was him, I was like, oh, let me listen. And I stuck with it a lot longer, trying to, you know, get a feel for it.
Who do you think would be the, if everybody at the station had a chance to do that for a weekend and then got maybe more runway, who do you think could be the best baseball play-by-player here? How do you think you would do?
I think I would do well, actually.
I think you'd do pretty well, too. I do.
Here's
I think
one,
you'd be okay.
Here's one thing that I was thinking about with Craig. Does voice matter anymore in play-by-play? Like, it doesn't matter in radio, but for play-by-play...
I think it still matters a little bit with play-by-play.
Right.
A little more than
too.
Just doing a show.
And it's not just Craig. Like, I noticed this with Steve Gelbs of SNY, who I think did a nice job, but... And obviously, there's a... You know, it's Gary Cohen, so anybody that fills in for Gary Cohen, you're going to feel just less of a presence.
Yeah.
But I felt like that with Craig a little bit, too, where it's Craig Carton, so when you're on the... When Craig's on the radio, you feel that presence, but I didn't feel that for the game.
Yeah,
but
yet, I do know what you mean by that.
I felt the presence of Susan.
Because you're used to hearing her in that situation.
Right, so is it just because it's not Gary Cohen or because it's not John Sterling? But I still feel like with, you know, Brennan Burke has a presence.
He's good.
He's a great play-by-play guy.
Yep.
And it's not just him, and I'm not leaving. I don't want to even mention on the names because it's like I'm leaving people out. I think they all do a good job. But I don't know. Or maybe it's just hearing a familiar voice in a different setting that was different to me.
It's a different skill.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Totally different skill. You mean, get a shot or what? Who, me?
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not going to keep begging for this.
All right,
if they want, you know, a big time voice to show up and sound big time, then I get the invite. And if they don't, then they don't.
Oh boy.
I mean, you asked me to call. I'm just going to be honest with you. I mean, do I think I can do it? Well, yeah, I do.
It's funny you say that because I was legit thinking of you as I'm listening to him and going through the thought of, like, you know, that presence. And I'm like, BT, I think, has. You have that voice and potentially present. Now, I haven't heard you do play-by-play. I know you did it, but I think that you would have... I think that you would have that. I don't know if it's just familiarity with, you know, with doing the shows with you.
But I know what you're saying. I mean, listen, I would let others say how I did. I think I would have a blast. I'd love to do it. Yeah. I'm not banking on it because they still haven't called.
Yeah,
and it's basically September, so it's not going to happen. But if it ever did, I'd be the best.